SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From beautiful Belmont Park, made more beautiful at this hour by the presence of Kentucky royalty. Nothing enlivens Belmont Park and New York racing more than the Kentucky royalty. What can I say? And particularly, it's okay to see Ian Wilkes, but it's much more fun to see Tracy. And
Thank you very much.
And it's much more fun to see Anita Cawley. On fire, baby. The one and only, and they're now look at them. They're pushing the microphone because neither one of them wants to actually come out and talk, but they will.
We appreciate the invitation.
I'm delighted.
And we're here because we need to keep an eye on Ian anyway, because, you know.
Well, that's one of your three jobs.
One of my three jobs, that is. And one's to keep an eye on him. So he brought me out. I'm supposed to be in bed, but he made me come out in hot water, but. McCracken's are way too lively for me today, so Ian had to take care of him.
Well, at least you didn't have to slap on the jodhpur and get out there and exercise.
I contemplated it, but no.
You must have ridden here once or twice.
Oh, at Belmont, absolutely, yeah. I brought Solvik up here 1 year. We've come up with Warriors. No, Fort Lauderdale come here. I didn't ride him, but I've ridden several here over the years since 1993.
So. Unbelievable. Well, it's a pleasure to catch up with everybody. I had never, in all the years of knowing Anita Cawley, I didn't know there was a Mr. Cawley. to be honest, because all the times I'd see you at Churchill and at Breeders' Cups, I never saw. He was out of sight. Was he being sequestered?
No, not on purpose. No, it's just the horses are my interest, and he likes the betting part of it. Those early mornings in the barn, not his thing.
Well, I ran into him at the draw, and here comes Nessie coming by for the Wilkes team, and earlier McCracken, who, Ian, as we fold you in as well and say good morning.
Morning.
Certainly, McCracken, it was one of the funny lines of Derby weekend. A lot of people noting his win on the Derby undercard and saying it came a year too late for those of us that picked him in the Derby. But
better late than never.
That's true. Yeah. But it does seem that whether it's dots being connected or understanding McCracken's best aptitude, it feels like you kind of have him as a four-year-old where you want to in races like the Met.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think the mile is going to be more his fortitude going forward. You know, he could get a mile and eighth, you know, but his two worst races have been a mile and a quarter. But yeah, no, I you know, it's funny this game, how it all works out. Yeah, we're a year late.
Well, talk a little bit about, we didn't see McCracken, just Nessie came out here, but talk a little bit about this opportunity and, you know, coming in. And it does feel like a kind of an unusual Met group that came together. I mean, there's the usual turnbacks and the stretch-outs. We've got the three-year-old in the case of Boldoro, which is kind of a throwback concept when it comes to the Met.
It's a very intriguing race. This Met mile, you know, with the three-year-old in there, and you got some real legitimate class speed. You got some middle-range closers or stalkers, and then you have some that come from way out of it. So it's a real interesting race, this one. You know, how exactly it's going to figure, you know, it depends if we get the rain, if any rain comes or something, that could change the whole dynamic of the race.
I think we're okay. And for those that have been, you know, quite concerned about the weather situation, we're down to about a 30% chance, and it's not even thunderstorm chances. It's the scattered variety
later in the afternoon
and into the evening. And even if you got just some light rain, that's not such a terrible thing, especially when we have periods of time between, you know, as the races start to stretch out. And, you know, of course, with the Manhattan being run before the Belmont, there's that 2 hour, you know, that 2 hour period where over the years there's been occasions, and this is not limited to this weekend, but certainly many Breeders' Cups and Derby weekends where the main track dries out over an hour.
Mr. Corley might be on the approach over here.
Oh, so they might be spotted in the same place at the same time. A rarity. Unbelievable. I met him at the draw at Citi Field the other night, and he introduced himself, which I really he's looking around for you guys. He doesn't know where you are. But we met the other night, and it was a pleasure. One thing that I guess we have to mention, and it's just... It's a sadness that comes with the game, and I don't want to get you upset, but we extended earlier the sympathies about On Fire Baby's first foal, and for those that had not heard, an on-track incident that claimed Baby's baby, and I was so saddened to hear it.
Thank you. That means a lot from people who get it, who understand how difficult that is. It is just, you know, the statistics of that happening are so low, and there's no blaming. It's just heartbreaking. We loved her. I really hadn't gotten to a point of naming her yet because I was so worried about a good name for that filly. She had a lot of tendencies that looked like her mother.
Like Baby.
You could spot her head and know that it was her mother. But I do have two gorgeous fillies right behind that. So I'm looking forward to those.
So Baby dropped three fillies in a row.
Three fillies in a row. A bit like her mother. So... who tended to drop more fillies than colts.
Well, that says something. And who's the yearling and the weanling by?
The next one is by Awesome Again.
Okay.
And the foal this year is Medaglia d'Or.
Oh, very nice. So you got a Medaglia d'Or filly.
Yes,
there's nothing
exactly
wrong with that.
No.
And did she get covered this year?
I just found out yesterday that we did not. That we're not pregnant. So
really, are you going to?
And that
are
was
you gonna,
into mischief. So
do you want to do a late cover, or are you going to let her?
At this point, no. I think we might be having a couple little issues to deal with,
and then we
will just give her some time, and we'll come right back at him in January or February.
She's eight.
She will. Is she eight?
Eight or nine?
No. I think she would be eight. I think that would be about right.
Well,
so
we had so much fun during Baby's career, and you've had so much success, and particularly with the fillies, and you've got a few out that I'm seeing out on the racetrack. I see a couple that are just had a winner.
Yes, I did. That was out of the Mare French Kiss, and her name is As I Please, and she won at Churchill. And paid $30.
there's never anything wrong with that.
That was a lot of fun.
I should mention that you guys are involved with Jack and Lori Wolf with Starlight, so you've been on the Justify run.
That's correct. Yes, really, really small little piece of that, but it's been fun to experience this run. And it's kind of crazy. People want to just, you know, jump right into the Triple Crown talk. And I was like, can we stop for a second and just kind of absorb Derby? I haven't even gotten past that yet. And then the Preakness. So it's a lot to process, but it's been just a ton of fun.
Well, the experience on this front, being a part of a group like this, a little different. When did you latch on with Starlight?
Well, that is interesting because typically it's kind of reversed. Most people start with a syndicate and then move to ownership. And I had, you know, been owning and breeding horses for a while. And I had kind of a year there where I didn't have much going on in the way of my own horses and decided that would be something to look into. And I had watched their group for a while, and they'd had quite a bit of success. And so I met with Jack, and it was actually at the Keeneland sales, and said, hey, I'm interested in this. And he looked at me and he said, okay, yeah, Star Ladies, that'd be great. And I went, no, Jack, I want with the boys. My mares throw a lot of fillies. I get a lot of exposure with females. So I like a little of that colt action.
And look at what you end up, at how this ends up. And of course, you know, the people may not know how it all came down, but those that expressed an interest in getting involved with Justify, it was a package deal.
Yes.
First of all, for Jack with Audible and with Justify. And so you guys are in Audible simultaneously.
That's right. Yes. So I went from coast to coast that week. Florida Derby, and then came home to Louisville for about 2 days, boarded a plane, and then went to watch Justify in the Santa Anita Derby.
Well, and I missed you somehow out there as well. So I'm doubly annoyed, but it's great that you're here, and it's great that I get a chance to see that there is a Mr. and Mrs. Cawley. Of course, there was a period when I was noticing their horses, and you know, calling you Mrs. Cawley and then someone said, you know, she's not like a dowager.
Yes, that would have been my best friend Marie McDonald in Little Rock. Yes,
right.
Yes.
As, you know, as if she was Mrs. I don't want to say anything bad about Mrs. Witham, but that's not the reference. But usually, when you say Mrs. Whoever in racing, it's Mrs. Dodge Sloan and Mrs. Hertz and Mrs. Whitney. But So we've graduated to Anita over the last few years.
Good. Marie will be happy about that.
Where is Marie? She's your running mate.
I know. She's not here. She's not here. She's working.
You guys are an entry everywhere you go. And Ian, you've got a number of runners. And before we talk about New York, give us a quick glance, because I did watch the draws yesterday, beside getting ready for what's going on here. And at Churchill, we've got the Mint Julep and Res Ispa running in there. Let's give a quick look ahead to the 11th, which is going to go as the nightcap at Churchill on Saturday, the Grade 3 going a mile and a 16th.
Yeah, very pleased with how this filly's trained at the last race. I just have to put a line through. I think the filly was in season on me. Was just a little hormonal, and I didn't get the true receptor that day. But since then, her training has been impeccable.
Nice. Res Ispa draws the rail, and you got Din Cannon.
Declan Cannon.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. And this is a good group, actually, that not everybody is in New York to run this weekend. And you've got really a big, good group. This is a competitive
solid
set.
Yeah, very solid race. There's no standout. There's not a, you know, you're not running for second. You think you're running for second or anything, but this is a very even bunch.
She's the English Channel mare, the 5-year-old that was second in the Honey Fox and just got beat a zap by Lull. Lull came back in that race and ran a big comeback race. Did Lull in that spot. So she's graded stake placed, and Mrs. Wilson happy about that. And maybe there's a graded stake win to add to her. Probably her last year of racing, you think? She'll.
You know, we'll see. You know, possibility is we got half a year to go, so we'll enjoy this racer. And we'll talk to Deb at the end of the year, and Deb and Ray, and see what they want to do. Mm-hmm.
It's a perfect opportunity with the visit here from Ian Wilkes, because at Woodbine they've got the big Queen's Plate preview card, the $500,000 Woodbine Oaks, where Wonder Godot will try her hand to get herself an Oaks win. She very well could have won the Kentucky Oaks with a little luck and a little different trip, but not to take away from Monomoy Girl. But you're going up there for the Alley Wow.
Yeah, Originator. One turn. I think she's just going to be a sprinter. She ran a really good race when I shortened the back up last time. Now 6.5 furlong should hit her right in the head here. You know, this should be right into her wheelhouse here.
Well, and if you do well with this, I imagine you'll look to Saratoga for the caress, that kind of thing. Or you got the 3-year-old restricted.
Yeah.
opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. I tried stretching her out, but she just didn't quite relax enough. She's just better short because they have a little more speed for her in the race, and she can sit just off the pace. She can be anywhere, and she's got a great turn of foot.
We mentioned, of course, the Metropolitan, where McCracken gets a chance at one of the elite grade ones for any age, for any horse in their career. However, you're also involved, even before we get to Saturday, you've got the Gold Cup opportunity, and Nessie was out on the track. Ian, you're one of the few trainers in North America, obviously the Australian and the two-mile Melbourne Cup. Here's a two-mile opportunity in the U.S., probably something when you came here, you never would have thought that there'd be a graded two-mile race again in the United States, but here it is, and you know, you've participated in a lot of these. I mean, we've talked about the marathon distances, main track or grass, and the opportunity to beat the Queen.
Yeah, isn't that nice, hey? It's been a joke. I'm going to have to kick the Queenie's butt.
And, of course, the Queen is here with William Haggis, brought Call to Mind, who's obviously a major player in this spot.
Yeah, all them European horses are going to be tough. You know, they know how to run the distances. One good thing about Nessie, he just doesn't get tired. The further he goes, the better he gets.
When you have a horse like this, and you know, the first expression with a young horse about one that wants a route of ground is he'll run or she'll run as far as they write races. What indication do you start to get when you get a horse in that this is a horse I can't get him tired or her tired? I can't. She never comes back blowing.
Well, you get to a case where you have to try him. You never know until you try them. I've had horses over the years where I thought would be a typical mile and a half horse. They can't do it. It's just their style. They don't relax enough. They don't get the right sort of setup, or they have to. It just doesn't figure out. Where this horse, he's his own vice. Like, he can be anywhere you want. He puts himself wherever he wants to be in a race, and he just loves it and thrives from it. The more training I do with this horse, the better he gets, and the longer I'm talking about, not going out there working 59 or something like that. It's just the more longer distance, he just absolutely eats it up.
It's fascinating. He's a Flower Alley. He's out of a Chris S. mare, so there was any possibility about what he wanted to do. You know, he's now 5 years old. He is a gelding, and he's won three times. He's made $300,000 in 21 starts. Mike Smith rode him in the San Juan Capistrano. You went out there. We talked after that win. That, of course, is a mile and three quarters. When it comes to pace and judging when to move, and you know, because so often in these races, I think as handicappers, we look at the fields and it's a little mysterious.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the angle and what is the, you know, what is the instruction? And I suppose you have to rely on the ability of guys like Mike Smith, who can judge the fact that they're going 2 miles. I mean, how often are they going to get that opportunity?
Yeah, you have to. You have to leave it to Mike. You know, he knows the horse now. I told him about it last time when he got on, about him, and everything went good, and now he knows him better. Mike's just got to ride his race here, and he has to know when to move, when not to move. And this horse is still a very young horse, even being 5, for this type of racing. He's only going to get better next year. Because if you look at his form, he really only started getting good at a late 4-year-old. So these type of horses, you like to see him around for 6-7-year-old.
How, and of course, I'm sure that the steeplechase crowd is got you on speed dial for a horse like this.
Yeah, Sean, yeah, he's asked.
Yeah, Clancy's already knocked on the door.
He asked a long time ago. I'll give it to him. I'll give it to him. He asked me as a 3-year-old when his horse was a 3-year-old. Yeah.
He identified him as a long distance candidate and a potential hopper.
Yeah, but this horse will never, Ed. When he's done racing, he'll go back to Sierra Farm and he'll retire there. Ed, he's always got a home. This horse has.
Well, I'm I had to ask, and I'm glad I did. Let's also talk about another marathon on the main track, and you're going to be involved in the Brooklyn as well, and talk about the opportunity with Giant Payday. And son-in-law Chris Landeros comes to town to ride.
Yeah, Chris. Chris is up here to ride One Go All Go in Manhattan. So, and he's been riding this horse. He's not an easy horse to ride. And here we are. This is going back to what I said before. This is a trial with this horse to see the mile and a half, see if he can get the... Always wanted to try him at this marathon distance. And he ran a really good race on the dirt two races ago. His number was good. So I want to try... He can run grass or dirt, but I think that the grass horses may be just a little too good for him that way, where I'm going to try him at a mile and a half on the dirt, and we'll see what he can do.
Well, and of course, you got War Story in here and Opportunity, Hard Study. This is a really nice addition. I mean, it's not often you look at a field these days of horses that are going to go 12 furlongs and you say, you know, this is a group that looks like, you know, 12 furlong horses, but it does.
Yeah, very strong race. To my dismay, I would like to see it a little easier.
You can always count on the honest response from Ian Wilkes. A couple of thoughts before I let you guys go enjoy your morning. And our friend Steve Carlin brought a bag of bagels from Bagel Boss. So feel free to grab bagels or
I can't take your breakfast.
No, I've got my own. I got one at my three sons in Stewart Manor. But that was nice of Steve to swing by. He's with Team Valor, and of course they've actually got the nice weekend lined up. Does Team Valor. Ian, you were back obviously at Churchill since Preakness. Your thoughts on particularly the horses preparing for Belmont, that you, if you got to see, you know, them going around during the training session?
I watched a little bit. I didn't watch too much. I've got plenty of my own. I'm trying to make that fast. But no, he looks good, Justify. He looks good. He looks like a man. They're going to have to run to beat him.
How would you, given that draw, what do you think Baffert would do? What would you want Mike Smith to do if he was yours in this setting against this group of nine?
Just leg him up and say, Mike, enjoy it. Just get into a rhythm. Don't get into a fast rhythm. Just get into a comfortable where the horse is inside himself, whether it means he's sitting second. If he's in front, that's fine. Just get into a nice comfort zone, into a rhythm, and let the horse do it.
Would you want to take control, or do you just basically judge if a couple of horses from the outside want to go to the front? Do you take him back a little bit after you establish position?
Just see, play the break. You know, don't play any plans. You know, I'm going to do this. If this going, just let your natural instincts come. Now, Mike's got all that. You've seen how he adapted with Arrogate in Dubai. You know, let play the break and just let Mike adapt to it and let the horse do it. Never, you can't do it without the horse.
No doubt. And this horse knocking on the door of immortality, as you know, we always trot out the I word when we get to this juncture. And you know, it's funny, yesterday was the anniversary of American Pharoah's win. Today is the anniversary of Touch Gold upsetting Silver Charm. So these, you know, I was on hand for most of those. There was that period where it seemed like we were getting a Triple Crown tried on an annual basis. And what has made this a little different is just the fact that we know it could be done. There were people wondering if it was ever going to be done again. And this is not the same horse as American Pharoah, as we're hearing on a regular basis. But he's obviously special to have done what he's done already.
But what I like to say, Steve, you know, I'm glad we had a trip, because our sport is unique, and for a horse to do it, it has to be unique. It has to be. You don't want it to be easy where you have a Triple Crown every year. You want it to be special. And when a horse does do it, they're special. As Carl always told me, you know, when a horse runs in the Triple Crown, they get better as they go on. They belong in it. Horses that don't belong in it, don't get better. They fall away. So you always see these horses. You can take that point given. You know, he had a rough trip, but he got better as the Triple Crown went on. You know, and those horses belong in it.
No, no doubt. And you know, the reality is, when you go through racing history and you look at the horses that won two out of three, you realize how many not crazy things happen, but how many times circumstances just either conspired against, or just if you know, just things happen. BBB beats Riva Ridge on a dry track. Riva Ridge is a Triple Crown winner. We talked about when we were at Derby. We talked about Nashua. It runs into bad luck and traffic. Otherwise, he's a Triple Crown winner. I mean, there's so many. Bimelec and Damascus spent the whole day fretting from the noise, and basically what Shoemaker said, when I got on him, I had half the horse I normally did. He should have won the Derby. He was by far the best horse in that crop. 67 would have been the first Triple Crown since Citation. You can go on and on.
A Fleet Alex.
Absolutely.
There's plenty of them.
Jeremy Rose had it to do over again, he might not have gone down to the rail, which was the worst part of the track, and it bogged him down. Point given. I mean, to Baffert's credit, he has never talked about extensively about the hoof and about how much trouble it gave him throughout Point Given's career. And it's why I talk about the Haskell. The Haskell win was the most courageous win a horse might ever. I mean, the horse was on three legs, and he gutted out the Haskell. If he's 100% sound, he should probably win the Derby and the Triple Crown, as dominant as he was in Baltimore and here in New York.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's special. You know, you want to make it special. You want to keep it special.
Well, you've seen from up close, and of course with the success of so many different kinds of horses, whether it's Fort Larned and all the other stake winners of your career, and being on the team with Carl Nafsker during Carl's incredible career. Appreciate the perspective, and I know you're rooting for the Collies as well, and you're training that.
Yes.
You're training that As I Please, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, this was a really fun way to kick off the morning, and some of our favorite people we enjoy when we're in Louisville, even if we don't see them, even if they don't come and say hello in the paddock or send me a note and say, where are you? I want to come say hello. But Anita and now I'm going to be embarrassed because... And James Gawley.
James.
Well, you're standing over there so sheepishly. You can come say hello on the radio. No, he's going to walk right away. He's not going to do it. So much fun. And back to the barn for you with Tracy. And
I got to make sure she's working.
Let me tell you, the only in that household, the only time he works is at the grill. When he's manning the barbecue out on the patio at home in the Ville.
Well, Steve, I've got it down. Yes, dear. I always get the last word in. Yes, dear.
Well,
good words.
It's one of the great working marriages in all of racing, because it takes him to keep a 6-5 hold on her, and it takes her to keep him going forward and focused. The Wilkes' team, I suppose, the Tomlinsons qualify on this front too.
Yes, they've been together a long time, and they've Vicky's on the front side working, and Mike's. Yeah, so it's a great team.
How about the Meet Tomlinson's hat?
It's great. It's great to see in it. You know, you always want to see people do good. There's plenty of races for people to win, and when you know we have the plenty of struggles, down times, and it's always great to see the good times.
Absolutely, and everybody goes through it. Even the big outfits.
Yeah.
There's been a few feet tubs thrown at the biggest of the outfits. Ian Wilkes, Tracy Wilkes in absentia, and the Collies. Thank you so much. Best of luck, Ian, with everybody from Woodbine to Churchill to right here. A good chance we'll be talking next Monday or Tuesday, maybe. And for you guys, a thrill, as many great thrills as you had have had in racing, what's gone on here, being involved with Starlight and with the Justified team. So excited for you and for everybody involved. Best of luck.
Thank you. Go Justify.
I love it. The Cawleys and the Wilkses joining us to start this Thursday at the races. We'll head to the break, and as we go, let's get you up to speed on everything that's going on. It's an overcast day, but we're in good shape weather-wise. Looks like even through Saturday, and there may be a little afternoon ambient rain, but not nearly what was people were fearing. As we're 48 hours out, a little bit more. The racing, of course, the festival starting today. And, you know, you call this kind of thing three-day racing leading up to the Belmont and the huge stake card Saturday. You call it a, you know what? When you think about all the international stands, Glorious Goodwood and Ascot and you know, Champions Day and all the different things that constitute Cheltenham worldwide, whatever you want to reference. This really, I did my heavy lifting handicapping all day yesterday and into the evening, and I'm actually a little incomplete on Friday, as it were. Saturday's completely done, and, of course, Thursday's already written up and at the website. After the scratches, I will put up the multi-race plays. But you look at these three cards, and they're just spectacular. They're just top to bottom incredible. And I saw Martin Panza as I walked in this morning, and I did two things. I congratulated him on the draw and how much fun that was, his idea, and how much fun that was, but also, of course, on these 3 days of racing. It was a tough winter around here, and just putting fields together and keeping cards interesting, etc. But, boy, this will test your resolve, and it may test your bankroll. I would consider this like you do the Breeders' Cup 2 days, and it's that kind of a marathon. 9 races today, 10 races tomorrow, and 13 on Saturday. So 33 races. Manage accordingly. We'll take the break and continue on into the Thursday edition. You know that Steve Haskin and Lenny Shulman will be here in a little bit, in the next probably half hour. I want to get a conversation in with Pat Cummings. Tomorrow is Pat's last day on his 3-year sojourn to Hong Kong, and Pat, one of the, I mean, really, you know, vibrant minds and spirits around the sport internationally, and we'll be back to North America shortly. We'll talk to him. I want to get Tony in, of course, and I got to get to Rich Eng. Steve Crist at the end of the show. Pete Fornital is going to be here as well. Justify made his first appearance on the track, and he looked like the 7 train. Back after this to Belmont Park.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfertello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Saturday, June 9th at Belmont Park, Kentucky Derby and Preakness winner Justify will be favored to become the 13th Triple Crown winner in history. Where should your money go? The 150th Belmont Stakes promises to be a historic event, producing possibly potent exotic payoffs. That's why now, more than ever, you need ExpressBet's free Belmont Wager Guide. It's available at ExpressBet.com beginning Friday, June 1st, and includes expert selections, analysis, and suggested $100 wagering strategies from some of the game's sharpest handicappers, writers, and broadcasters. Plus, you'll get important stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. Check back Belmont Week for daily updates, Johnny D's insightful horse-by-horse analysis, and a revised guide, including Edio's picks available Friday, June 8th. Visit ExpressBet.com to access the free Belmont Wager Guide, to open a new account, including up to a $500 bonus, and to check out special Belmont Stakes offers and promotions.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races. Reaching for Pat Cummings. And as we wait for Pat, I will mention, having referenced Touch Gold and the fact that today is the anniversary, going back to 97, of Touch Gold's upset of Silver Charm. And I put the link to Tom Durkin's call on Twitter. And the photo, the Coghlanese photograph of the approaching the wire. And I made a kind of a second tweet using it as a way to communicate for those that may not have heard. Approaching a week on Saturday, John Pirata, who is, of course, who started the show and brought JJ and Sam to the radio in 2005, and really made it happen, and has been an incredible friend and mentor to me. John suffered a heart attack on Saturday, and at first they thought it was a fairly mild heart attack, and then subsequent examination and so forth showed that it was actually very serious and did some damage. So John is actually home as of yesterday. But for all of you that have worked with John in some way, and that is a wide swath across the industry, I know everybody wishes him a speedy recovery, and you know, and I suppose, you know, John is notoriously healthful and in terms of diet and exercise and everything. And so, you know, that it's not, I suppose, cautionary. I don't know how you necessarily want to phrase that, but he was very lucky here. And we're all lucky that he dodged this bullet, and that is what it was. And, of course, John was the co-breeder of Touch Gold and was heavily involved with Deputy Minister, and he and John Secura and the Holzinger Inc. Were the breeders of Touch Gold. And I know it's one of the great points of pride for John in his long career around the game, in the game. So, thinking of him, and if those of you that have, you could tweet at him. The one option to pass along your thoughts, and for those of you that have his number and around the industry that are hearing this for the first time, John would be happy to hear from you. So I wanted to take time and get that note in. Let's go back and talk to Pat Cummings. And got to be a you know, for anybody in any walk of life, not just in the racing game, but when you have committed time and energy and your ideas and everything that goes into work, what constitutes your career choices, when you close a chapter and get ready to start a new one, it's emotional, and it is reflective and so forth. Pat Cummings, you may have seen the tweet from Pat, the last race meet, as they call it, in Hong Kong, and knowing that Friday is his final day of this exciting experience that he's had at the Hong Kong Jockey Club, and they're going to miss him. But wherever his services and his creative ideas land and manifest, that'll be the next chapter. Pat joins us now, and it's been just invaluable, you as a guide for so many in North American racing, for us to, you know, understand and come to really enjoy what goes on in Hong Kong.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that. It's certainly been very fun on my part. You know, before I got here, I was certainly attentive to what was going on in Hong Kong, and I've been here two or three times before. But to be immersed in it for three full seasons and kind of the ups and downs and ins and outs of it all, it's just been a fantastic experience. And quite a number of nice sentiments that were shared along by different people after I posted that. And with, you know, just people saying, hey, you know, I learned a lot. And I'm certainly appreciative of that. But look, it's been a big effort by Hong Kong to get its racing product in front of more people. And among the things that we did over the 3 years was there was a partnership with the Racing Forum. And of course, this will still go on, certainly beyond me, but you know, a partnership with the Racing Forum to get the PPs in the forum, to get Marcus Hirsch and Steve Anderson to cover the races, to get Andrew Hawkins' full card analysis, which he had done for 3 years prior with the South China Morning Post, and he came over and joined the club and joined our team. And you know, it's been a long-standing effort to increase the international awareness of Hong Kong racing, and it's been a lot of fun to be a part of that and see where the club has gone in that time. You know, looking back over, kind of reminiscing over kind of where things were before and where they are now, I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but you know, you certainly feel as though a lot of people in America hold Hong Kong up as a bit of a gold standard, albeit a very different environment to what happens in America. And you know, some of the things just can't be compared. But what most people don't remember is that it wasn't always like that, okay? That Hong Kong racing experienced a roughly 10-year substantial decline from 1995-96 until about 2005-06. Those seasons, racing turnover in Hong Kong dropped by about 40%. So we're talking about only 13 years ago, 12, 13 years ago, things were not great. There was a lot of negativity. Money was going elsewhere. It was not being focused through the legal channels. And the club made a very concerted effort to change. And they finally got back, I think the number was about 92 billion Hong Kong. Back in 1995, the 95-96 season, 92 billion in total handle over the course of the season, okay? They didn't get back to that number until the 2012-13 season. So there was a complete yo-yo of money from 95 back to 2012, a long 17-year period for which there was essentially no positive, basically no net growth. Hong Kong was back to where it was. But there were some significant changes that were put in place back in 2006, and they had tremendously positive effects, both the on-course and the off-course experience. And it has gotten Hong Kong to where they are now. And so last year, total turnover was 117 billion Hong Kong dollars, so just shy of 15 billion U.S. from 800 races. And, if all things being equal keep up, it'll be a little bit higher than that this year. Maybe I think the projections were in the 4, 5, 6% range. So it's been great to be a part of it for this period of time, and very thankful for my opportunities here, and really looking forward to what comes ahead, and we can talk more about that in, a week or two.
Well, I've already tried to wheedle it out of you, but I'll let you deliver the specifics as you choose to. That's fine.
Yeah, no, you'll get the word to come, and I'll be happy to talk more about it then. But going to take a little time off here. I finish up on Friday. Believe it or not, my visa actually expires right on Friday. 3 full years. And it's the very last day, and I'm working up to the end. And so I actually have to leave Hong Kong. I have to take the ferry over to Macau, which could be interesting because we have a typhoon that's about 200 miles offshore that's churning up the sea. So I'm going to get in the boat tomorrow and go across to Macau for the night and come back on Saturday. And then I've got a couple trips planned, and I'll make it back to the U.S. in about 5 weeks' time or so, and then up to Saratoga for it.
Very nice. Well, Pat, we're looking forward to picking up and going forward with Andrew Hawkins, but let's do the nuts and bolts before I get a Belmont thought from you. Some of the nuts and bolts news from the week and looking ahead to the weekend.
Well, the Jockey Championship, Steve, continues to really get just a ton of attention here, and for good reason. Joe Morera on 116 wins. Zach Purton, 115. The two of them have just gone ding-dong over these last couple weeks, but Morera's on a two-meeting suspension, the first night of which was served yesterday, and he'll be out on Sunday as well. The good news for Purton is there's 11 races on Sunday instead of the normal 10. He'll have 10 rides over the 11 races and is down now only one win because he won two last night. And this has really kind of gripped Hong Kong racing fans. Are you for Morera or are you for Purton? Purton, if you reclaim the title for the first time since Morera came to town 5 years ago. So it's been actually four full seasons ago, let's put it that way. it's been Marrera ever since. So this really has everybody kind of engaged, and Marrera, or rather Purton, with, like I said, 10 rides on Sunday. Now, the difference between the two of them, I think it's worth noting that if there were a market on this, I still have to think Marrera is a strong favorite here, even though his last couple runs, last couple weeks, rather, have not been all that great, because he can ride at 113 pounds, and Purton can only ride at the minimum 120. No one's allowed to ride heavier than that. He could go down to 118. You're allowed to ride up to 2 pounds over, but only to 120 pounds. So you've got this Australian who has been here for 8 or 9 seasons in Purton, clawed hard to get his first championship, and it all happened just as Joe Marrera came into town. Marrera has been unstoppable in recent years, but this season's been different. And two real great professionals going at it, and it's fun to follow as kind of things progress. Now, as I said, on Sunday at Sha Tin, 11 races on tap. Going to start at 12:30 a.m. U.S. Eastern Time. They start with one of the Griffin races, the races for the new imports into Hong Kong that had been previously unraced. Field of Seven gets the day going. But the back end of the card is really where the action is. The feature event will go as the Members' Cup. No big, really, kind of Class 1, Class 2 races. It's a fairly, it's a mundane Sunday in Hong Kong. But on a mundane Sunday, they're still going to turn over about $215 million, Steve. So if that's what we're talking about for the mundane, then I think most people would take it. But the Members' Cup will go as the feature Class 3 event, Race 8, 1,200 meters on the turf. They're out on the sea course, so that temporary rail is extended almost to its farthest position. And I actually think Zach Purton's mount here is probably the one who's going to take all the beating. Chris So, the trainer, who's had just a horrid run. He has just been, got off to a fast start. He put about 10 winners up in the first month of the season, and has had only 12 winners since. But this horse last time out, at odds of 50-1, ran second beat in a half length with jockey Eddie Lai aboard. Now the switch will go Eddie Lai back to Zach Purton. It's the first time Purton's getting on this horse, and you know he's kind of riding the hot hand. He's been drawn in some wide gates of late, and he gets drawn in barrier three. It's been a long run of outs for Chris So, but I think Prince Harmony with Purton is probably the horse to key, and there's plenty of reason to spread underneath in the exotics. And there's actually, in this race, Steve, there is a former American-based horse, a horse by the name of Markula. I think I may have referenced this horse to you at some time before, who actually ran in a California Derby and an El Camino Real Derby for Jeff Bondi back in the day. He was a maiden winner at Golden Gate Fields. He's a son of Coast Guard, a cowbred, and kind of a fairly strange purchase in the Hong Kong, but he's done okay in the past. I don't like him in this particular spot. He hasn't been in the best shape or form, but I think there's going to be plenty of value underneath in the exotic. So that's the Members' Cup. And if we're just looking ahead, Steve, and we have a chance just to kind of talk about the rest of the season, there's only a couple more group races left on the calendar, and that's coming up June 24th. The Premier Cup and the Premier Plate, both Group 3 events coming up towards the end of the season. And then the last day of the season will be Sunday, July 4th, 15th, rather, the last day of the season. Plenty to come. And a bit of news that did come out today here, Steve. Mr. Stunning, the Hong Kong sprint winner, subject to a stable change. Now, I have Mr. Stunning as probably the favorite to be named champion sprinter here in Hong Kong. He had the one Group 1 win and is basically right there, thereabouts in every major sprint race for the season. Well, he's been taken away from our leading trainer, John Size, and goes to the second leading trainer, Frankie Lohr, with really the first Group 1 caliber horse in Frankie's barn. He's had an absolutely sensational season, 56 wins from 377 starts. His numbers have been outstanding. His first season training in his own name. He is a former assistant for John Size and worked with Mr. Stunning, to be fair, last season. So Frankie knows the horse well, and Frankie picks him up. And it's a sign of the embarrassment of riches that John Size has. There's only about 45 horses in Hong Kong that carry a handicap rating of 100 or higher. John Size has one-third of them out of 23 trainers. He's well on his way to his 10th, record-setting 10th championship as a trainer in Hong Kong. But he's lost a Group 1 horse today. Mr. Stunning goes to Frankie Lohr. So
well,
plenty of action here, even though it's a fairly ordinary week coming up.
Well, Pat, before we wrap, there's somebody that wants to looking forward to seeing you back stateside and wants to congratulate you and wish you well.
Pat Stell Roman's here.
Oh, Pat. Dale, my man.
What's up, buddy?
How you doing, buddy?
Good. That was very interesting to sit here and listen to.
I'll be seeing you sooner rather than later.
All right. Well, get on back over here and visit with us.
Will do. Absolutely, my friend.
Well, Pat, going to talk a little Belmont quickly with Dale before he goes back to the barn. But before we go with you, your Belmont thoughts, and you don't have to pick. You don't have to pick Free Drop Billy
just because.
Yes, you do.
Because he's sitting here.
Yeah, no, I won't feel the pressure, but I've loved seeing some of Dale's quotes in the last few weeks, and I greatly appreciate those. To be honest, look, it would be great if Justify wins, of course. I think anybody that, you know, is associated with the sport would think that's a fantastic thing. But as a punter, I just can't have him. I can't have him, Steve. He can win, but he's not going to do it with my money on him, that's for sure. I think there's far too much other value in the race. I'm not a huge Hofburg fan in this spot, to be honest. I thought he did run very well in the Derby. But my interest, I think, the focus for me, I'm Vino Rosso. I liked what I saw in the Derby, albeit an even effort. He did make up some ground, had a very wide trip, and I just like the way he's kind of coming into the race from everything I've seen from afar. And I don't think the distance is going to be any problem for him. So Vino Rosso is kind of the way I'd be aiming, and with plenty of value around. I think you almost have to play the races to justify who's even going to hit the board. Again, great if he wins, great for the sport, but from a wagering standpoint, I'm going to look in another direction.
Well, I can't argue with any portion of that, and I certainly am utilizing Vino Rosso as one of the keys along with Free Drop Billy, which we're going to talk about with Dale right now. But Pat, enjoy the post career in Hong Kong time off, and we will see you this summer soon enough.
Fantastic. And say hi to everybody at Umberto's for me.
There you go. King Umberto's, absolutely, where Pat is missed. In fact, Pat's absence has put a real dent in the King Umberto's finances. They've delayed the expansion. They're going to push back.
Unbelievable.
So you better get back to Hempstead Avenue quick.
I'll make up for it.
We're counting on you.
Thank you.
Pat Cummings, HK, everybody, at least for one more day on the HK and the Hong Kong Jockey Club. We'll continue as well with Andrew Hawkins and our insights that have been initiated by Pat these last 2 years. And Dale Roman's sitting in front of me. We had fun at the Mets game. The other day after the draw, you were, in fact, all four of you, that was the most fun draw. I said yesterday, that was the most fun draw ever.
That was a good time. Those are good people, good friends. Todd even made a feeble attempt of trying to be mean, which is really hard for him. but he even got involved, and it was fun.
Well, that, and you knew the minute he started on, you know, what time everybody was going to arrive at the barn.
I knew right where he was going. Anybody doesn't know Todd other than what they see on TV. He's a very kind person. I've never heard him say anything mean about anybody. He's fun, can be funny, engaging. He'll go into robot mode every once in a while in interviews, but that's not the Todd Fletcher we know. He showed a little personality the other day.
It's funny because Chuck Simon, you know, went to University of Arizona with him, and so early on, when Todd felt, you know, at least for me with the broadcasting, it, you know, felt difficult to flesh him out and to get him loosened up, and to, you know, to you know, you want to kind of get through the veneer and get him, and it's only been 13 years, but I mean I Chuck told me, I mean, that you have no idea. Nobody has any idea how much fun and what a devilish sense of humor, right, and how funny he is and warm. And it's not a defense mechanism, but
it's his business.
Yeah.
It's business. He has that corporate image to portray.
Yes.
And he makes us all look bad in doing it. But he is a good person. All those guys, they're all friends. You know, Wayne, just to sit up there in between the three of those guys was an honor.
Well, Lucas had his zingers, and so did Baffert, of course, and you and Todd all taking turns. And
Andy makes it easy. He's an easy target.
Yes. Well, you know, it's funny. It's funny that he, if it was up to him, he would never ask about that question about the post. He couldn't care less, and he knows it's him. But it's one of those functional things.
Believe me, that's what makes me get on him even more all the time, because he doesn't want to ask the question. He has to, and it gives me an opportunity. Anybody that doesn't know what we're talking about, Andy always has to ask, what do you think of your post, and how's your horse doing? Well, I've never heard anybody say my post sucks and my horse is doing terrible. I brought him across the country for $1 million classic, right, for no reason. I said, Andy, those are two dumbest questions in horse racing. Come on.
It was funny. Yeah. Well, in terms of post, it was important to get Baffert's immediate reaction to drawing the rail. Not that we don't know exactly what Mike Smith will do, which is break, sharp and move to the 2.5 path.
Probably. He'll go right to the lead and try to keep right on going in. You know, if you're coming into the Belmont and you're going 1.5 miles with the pace scenario here and you're worrying about the post position, that should be the least of your worries. Because it's not like the Kentucky Derby. I mean, it's down inside there can be death in the Derby. But here going 1.5 miles, you're going to be going slow enough, only 10 horses in the race. They'll sort themselves out before the first turn, and post position should be the least of your worries.
Let's talk about the scenario for you, and it is one of the oddities, frankly, and the Triple Crown events have a lot of these kinds of statistical fun facts, and you finishing third in this race 4 times is really
an odd statistic.
It really is.
Yes,
including with a maiden. You
with
kicked
maiden.
It off with
first
Nolan's
time.
Cat.
That's when my mother fell in love with my good friend Tom Hammond. She said that before the race, everybody's laughing at me for running the maiden, and Tom Hammond said she, after the race, I guess they won't doubt him anymore. And now that's my mother's favorite man. But no, this race is such an important race, and it's been a great race to me. Just coming up here, even now, I've never won it, but run third 4 times and just participating in the race that the Triple Crown was won by American Pharoah. The electricity in there. Bob and I talked about that the other day on the airplane coming over here. Just the electricity in the air that day. If you weren't here, you need to be here this time if he does it again, because there's nothing like it. I mean, it's like winning a World Series. I was at a World Series victory one time, and he felt the same type of electricity in the air. And those things only happen a few times in your life. So anybody who's thinking about coming, you ought to be on over here.
Which World Series championship?
Cincinnati Reds.
Oh, in 80,
not the Red Machine.
In 88?
88.
You were there in 88.
Yeah, 88.
Mario Soto and the team.
Rob Dibble.
You yep. bet. Yep. And I had already left Cincinnati, but became a Reds fan when I lived affectionately what I refer to as the Vern Rule years, when they were dreadful in early 80s. But I was there I was living in Kansas City. I went from Cincinnati to KC, and bought season tickets for 85, and it was unbelievable.
It was an unbelievable.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a great
cool.
feeling.
You don't think about it now, but who was the ace, the star pitcher they had? The Reds at the time. I can't remember.
Well, Soto. No? Wasn't
no,
Mario Soto?
There was one other
at that point?
No. But anyway.
Oh, I saw his perfect game. Tom Browning.
Tom Browning. That's who it was. Tom Browning. So I'm listening to it on the radio, and they come on. They're running out of relievers in the last game, and they get on the radio and say, Tom Browning, we know your wife's having a baby today, but you need to turn around and come back. You might have to go in the game. I just always have wondered if he did turn around, because he didn't show up in the game. They ended up winning and being fine. But you think about different times where you could have called somebody on the telephone, but they sent the message through the radio.
It's funny, and thanks to Adam Koenig, the Northern Kentucky Assemblyman, who is correcting us, actually, 1990.
90, okay.
88. I'll tell you what 88 was, why it's in my head. The All-Star Game was at Riverfront.
Right, okay.
And
I came in
for that. 1990, and everybody was so convinced that they had no chance in the series against the A's. And they beat their brains in. And actually, it's reminiscent in some ways of tonight is game five of the Stanley Cup Finals. And I do want to throw out and the Caps, the Caps can close out the Golden Knights. And there is a horse racing reference here, of course. And we're thinking about the late Arnie Heft. And Sylvia Heft and Tim Keefe, of course, who trained for them, and Alex Ovechkin. And, of course, the horse, Ate Too Fast to Catch, that Arnie Heft named for Ovechkin, who will reach a career.
He went a long ways to get to the end of that.
Right?
That's pretty good.
Not so bad, huh?
You're a professional.
It's not my first, first day.
Yeah. I'll tell you a funny story about that Reds game, too, because Seiko hits a home run. And a guy throws it back on the field. And I was pretty young in 1990. But happened to be sitting on the front row in the first baseline. And the umpire took the ball and pitched it to the kid that was sitting next to me. And his father was a friend of mine that took me to the game. He took the ball and mailed it to Canseco and got a very nice letter back from him.
I thought that
was pretty cool.
That is cool. Yeah. That is cool.
A lot of interesting sports facts we could talk about other than horse racing, people.
Listen, Cincinnati, anybody that gets me started on Cincinnati and my years there, which I just absolutely love, lived in East Walnut Hills, and I'll get sidetracked very easily in Cincinnati Gardens and Xavier, and please.
It's a great area. Great area. We better talk about the Belmont Stakes.
All right, let's get back to the Belmont Stakes. And free drop, Billy. And, I tell you, this feels like one of those occasions, Dale, where people are going to, particularly if Billy runs well, they're going to feel pretty bad about themselves for having given up on him.
Yeah, there's no reason to give up on him. You look at his form and who he's been running against. He's always competitive up until two races. He wasn't competitive. Didn't happen to be the biggest two, the Breeders' Cup and the Derby. This is a really good, talented horse, and if you look at all the statistics, he's got the best pedigree to go to mile and a half. His father won this race. His mother's average earning distance was 8.1, which is supposed to be important in this race. And he's really doing well. We weren't really focused on coming here until he told us we need to bring him. He's doing so well. And today's about as good as he's ever trained.
The work just before you left, I thought looked spectacular.
It was. And that's the one that said we got to go now. That's when we finally started calling the Garden City Hotel. And
to dust up the Roman suite
to get my room ready, and we'll be here. and then the last work the other day was really good.
That's the one. I mean,
two back was the one you're talking about.
No, I thought the one the other day.
Sunday was excellent.
I thought it was very good.
It was very good.
He looked smooth. There had been some people have said that he's got kind of a herky jerky inside outside kind of a way of going, and that you wonder. I thought that was the most fluid he looked, and he galloped out like a champ.
Didn't want to stop.
No, he went all the way to the track kitchen.
He did, and that was. It was impressive. And then today, I'm telling you, he had his ears up and just bounced around there and taking everything in. He's a smart horse, too. And believe me, he's live. He'll run well.
When you're developing the three-year-olds during the – well, I mean, even as early as the two-year-old, you're always looking for your Derby horses, and you had a bunch. I mean, we talked at the beginning of the winter, and you had a roster of seven or eight really – high potential three-year-olds, and in fact Seven Trumpets just the other day with a nice win.
Yes, he came back and ran well, and King Zachary came back and ran well, so a couple of them didn't make it to the Derby, but maybe we'll see him in some of the late summer races. Like going to the Haskell and Travers. Those are good races, too.
Well, there's the Indiana Derby, and the Ohio Derby.
Every state that has horse racing has a Derby, and they're all good purses, and and fun to be a part of.
When you know, this is one of those Woody Stevens questions, and of course Woody was identifying his Belmont winner, literally in July the previous year. For you, when you're watching the 2 year olds go, and as they're developing, whether they've run or whether they're done what a free drop Billy did, with early success at two, what quality in their way of going, in their disposition, whatever it is.
There's three or four things that you look
for. For this race, though, right. I'm asking. Not just for Derby.
For the Belmont.
I'm thinking specifically where you say, he might not have the speed for the Derby, but he looks like a stayer that will appreciate Belmont.
Well, you have to be an efficient mover to go a mile and a half. That's one thing, in my opinion. I always think if the more efficient you are, the less wasted action, the less tired you get bouncing over this racetrack.
Pause there and explain to people the difference and what distinguishes a horse with a conservative amount of energy and no wasted. The horse that keeps their legs under them, or what?
The horses are spring and catch animals. It's not as much as muscle as you'd think. It's like a pulling lever system in the back. They push off the back, catch with the front. There's only 1 foot on the ground at a time. And the back leg is extremely important. If it's set up just right and it's squared and they're not pointed in or pointed out, then they say the energy stored in the back leg is 90% of, up to 90, over 90% of energy efficient. So it expands all that energy back out and it pushes forward. We just figure if a hawk's outside or inside and it can't be 100% efficient, they're going to get tired quicker because they're doing a lot more work. And then on the front, you just want them, you don't want too much knee roll. You want them throwing them out there right in front of them, their feet barely off the ground, and bouncing over the racetrack. And I think if they're an efficient mover, that saves up a lot of energy.
You've had any number of horses on this topic. You've had any number of horses, Dale, that ended up on the turf. And we think of Patio Prado. This horse does have some of the knee action that you would identify. It's obvious that long-term he'll get grass opportunities, free drop Billy. But differentiate that as well. And, of course,
I'm going to tell you, I don't understand turf action. I keep hearing about that knee roll all the time. But I'll tell you, my best turf horses in Kitten's Joy, Little Mike, they Tappet's Fly, they were very efficient movers. They barely got their feet off the ground. They just call them daisy cutters.
Daisy,
they could just kick the ground. They didn't roll those knees like people talk about all the time, and they just got over it real easy.
I think the difference, and I over the years I try to explain this because it's one thing that I remember I read about early and it always stayed with me in terms of the difference of the way a horse on the turf and a horse on the dirt. And one thing that people don't realize on the dirt, that when their hooves hit, they slide before the pastern and everything starts to maneuver.
To break over.
And the angle, when the people say break over, that's what they mean. And the you're talking energy distribution and efficiency of motion. And on the turf, the ones that in that case, the hoof sticks and it doesn't slide, and that's the difference between the movement in horses on the grass and on a main track.
And that's why they say a bigger foot on the turf
can help.
They're not sinking in as deep and then having to pull back out of it. But it's amazing. I don't understand. I don't know anybody that does that. Why pedigree plays such a big role in the surface that a horse likes? So there's more to it. There's more genetic involved.
Pastern,
I've always heard that sometimes it's, if they have a little weaker back leg, that they get over the turf easier. And they all run on a turf. I think all of them will run on the turf. That's their natural surface. It's just when you move to the dirt, some of them can't run on it.
Exactly.
Kitten's Joy is a perfect example. When I had him as a baby, at first, he wasn't going faster than 103 and on the dirt. Well, of course, you don't get the opportunity very often to work horses on the turf. So we go to Saratoga, only place at the time that you could work any horse you wanted on the grass. I took him out there just hoping that he'd show me a little bit more, and I looked down the watch after the work, it was 58 and change. I turned around, and the clockers behind me. I said, "What did y'all have?" They said, "I thought my clock was broke." They said, "Same thing you did." And, of course, the rest was history. Ends up being champion turf horse. And he made it. Ken Ramsey, that's one of the things about Ken. He puts the horse first. I mean, he wants to win all the races, but we had Jerry Bailey come and work him on the dirt to see if we wanted to take him to Kentucky Derby, because back then you could go on earnings, whether you're a turf horse or not. And Jerry worked him one time. He said, "I can't believe the difference." So Ken said, "Don't even worry about it. Let's keep him on." And for Ken Ramsey and I not to take a chance, That's how much we love that horse.
Well, don't worry. Ken's made up for it by running a slew of silly kittens on the in the Derby that shouldn't have run.
He didn't do it with, when he was with me. He didn't do all that. But.
Well, the only reason he does it is because during the walkover, he's got them turned into a billboard. Kitten's
right.
Joy. They call Hillendale Farm.
Right. I'm telling you, Kitten's Joy, you better breed all the mares. You know, Free Drop Billy's brother's by Kitten's Joy, and he's probably one of the best surf horses in the world.
Hawksbill.
Hawksbill, yeah. So yeah, he's a Kitten's Joy.
And in fact, we keep bringing it up that in fact, Free Drop Billy, you know, people are saying, oh, I don't think he's going to. Of course he's going to make the distance. Wait.
Right.
The mile and a half for him is actually
that's
a natural.
Excuse. That's an excuse I can't use.
Yeah. Well,
but one of these days we'll get him on the turf and try and see what happens.
Well, you have to, too.
I mean,
there's no harm. You have been home. I just asked Ian Wilkes an hour ago the same question. You watched Justify come out of the Derby. You watched him now come out of Preakness. You've watched Baffert operate. Talk a little bit about what you see, and maybe you can answer the question why people have been dismissive of the Preakness effort.
I'll tell you why. I have a big that was a great race he ran the Preakness. People are talking about how he looked vulnerable. He had a champion looking him in the eye.
For a mile and 2/16.
Over a mile, right. Every jump of the way, they were out there doing all the work themselves.
Crazy.
I don't care if he did just hang on by half a length or length, whatever it was. He, by hanging on, was phenomenal. And that's what I thought. Bob and I talked about that the other day, too. I said, they're knocking the race. I said, that was the best race he's ever run. It wasn't a cheap speed horse out there running with him that stayed around for 3/4 of a mile. Chad's horse ran a super race. They just took the race to one another. I loved it. I thought it was a great performance, a great race. It was entertaining. I sat in my hotel room down the street from Pimlico because it rained so hard, and I thought it was a super race.
Your thoughts, I mean, if you were not involved in the race, obviously you're in to win. What do you expect how this unfolds?
Well, it's his race to lose, and I think he'll break out of one hole. I mean, if I'm in the one hole and I have the source, I just want to get him clear and get him up, break good, and go to the lead and try to hang on. So, you know, the only thing that could happen I see with him is if he just goes way too fast or he stumbles and gets in behind horses, something like that happens to him. But I mean, we've seen it with a lot of horses coming here trying to win a Triple Crown that looked unbeatable.
There's no doubt.
You know, it's hard to have that much luck for as far, long as you need it with all the preps. Not just the talent, but just not to have a mistake or a bad thing happen to you in all those races. Now, top horses overcome mistakes a lot of times, but you know he's never had any problems.
The maxim is that any horse will give you one run for a quarter of a mile or 3/8. A good horse will give you two responses, and Hall of Famers will respond. Not as many times as asked, but enough times to distinguish them as champions.
Yeah, that, you know, Pat Day, coming up, he rode all my horses when I was young, and that taught me so much and helped my career so much. He used to tell me most horses don't have more than 1/8 of a mile full-out run.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, how he would get past and come back and win all the time. He said he just waited till he said the top horses, 3/16, 1/4 mile at the most, was the best he ever rode. And, the good horses, they can still breathe good when they're breaking 12-second 8s. I think that's a big part of it. We used to measure a lot of their airways and put microphones and listen to their airway as they're running, put it back, play it back on a little voice analysis machine, and they all breathe fine. So you know when they're going slower, it's who can keep their rhythmic breath when they're going under 12-second 8s. That separates the men from the boys.
And it's also you just explained the difference and why this race has been won by horses that everybody looked at the PPs and said, well, that one's too slow.
Right.
It's because they're not going as fast. Tony Black will join us. It's not how fast you're going. It's how you're going fast.
How you're going fast. And it's all about the rhythm and getting going and the pace scenario. And yeah, it's a special race, the Belmont Triple Crown special. It's just fun to be here and be a part of it.
Well, you take advantage of every opportunity, and you continue to just entertain and offer as much, you know, as much access. You know, you were doing a terrific series leading into, in fact, to Derby. It really providing kind of an open window into the operation of the game, and you know, it's refreshing. You've always been frank. You've called out those that have needed to be called out when the occasion arose.
I don't judge anybody. I need to be called out more than anybody else. But yeah, thanks for having me on here, and let's have a good weekend.
Well, without a doubt, we'll wish you the best of luck. And I guess I can't let you go because Tammy is reminding me that I have to ask you about the choking.
Oh, the other day at the baseball game, that was a great draw, the whole thing, the whole night in the baseball game. Were you already gone by the time that happened?
Yes, I think so, obviously, because I don't know what she's talking about.
I went up to go to the bathroom, and there was a girl choking on a hot dog.
Oh, my God.
And her mother was kind of frantic, and she was trying to get security help, and a guy was making a phone call. And I'd done the Heimlich on somebody once before, so I walked over and said, "You want me to try the Heimlich?" And the girl shook her head. She's like 25, and two or three pumps, and a hot dog popped out, and she was fine. So
you're a hero.
Well, and I'm trying to use that for a little divine intervention, Sam.
Well, at the very worst, you'll wait for Travers, as you said the other day. Unbelievable. Dale Roman's hero at City Field.
Yeah,
look at this.
Field.
You find out stuff that you didn't know happened.
Well, you had to find something to do. The game was so boring.
Unbelievable.
See you later.
Dale, thank you so much. We've got a big conversation coming up maybe in a few weeks. Thank you. Let me get a picture so I can put it on the air. I got to get one. And we've also been corrected. We've been completely wrong. It was Jose Rio that we were thinking of. It was Brownings who you're thinking of, but it was Jose Rio that was that we're also kind of that are slipping in that we're forgetting that was one of the big aces of that championship team for the Reds. We're 20 minutes in. Where's Haskinen? Where's Haskinen? And Lenny, they were supposed to be here 10 minutes ago, but I'm glad we got a chance to talk to Dale, which is always always time well spent. Let's take a break here. Going to come back. If I don't have Haskin and Shulman here yet, then we will get Tony in here. Want to get Tony's Belmont thoughts as well. And then later, Pete Fornatale, Steve Crist. We're live at Belmont, waiting for changes as well. And, of course, the first post today is 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock post today. 12:50 first post tomorrow. Don't ask me why all this, and then 11:35 on Saturday, all right? So 2 o'clock today, 12:50 tomorrow, 11:35 on Saturday. Back after this at the races, SiriusXM.
The latest racing news.
It's at the races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.